time for the In the Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yes, yes, we are back. Another week in your ear. Ali Muhammad is out. He will be back soon. But in the meantime, in between time, we got a guest. We have our In the Conversation political correspondent, former White House digital engagement director, founder and CEO, and host of the Hip Politics podcast, founder and CEO of Hip Politics. I want y'all to give it up for Cameron Tremble. Cameron, what's going on?
Damian, what's up, man?
Chilling, man.
Doing well.
I'm chilling, man. It's been a minute since we had you on the mic, man. How you been?
I've been great, man. Catching up on all you guys are still on my must listen every week. Thanks for that t-shirt, that merch. I've had a few questions about that over the last year or so when people have seen me rock it here and there. So hopefully that drew some more listeners and fans. But I've been good. I've been staying busy.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up. Yeah, no doubt about the tea and all of that. I'm glad you're out here repping. Yeah, man. Glad to have you in the building. You know, obviously, your purview is broader than just politics, but you are our go-to politics guy. So there's probably going to be some things that I want to ask you about because we're about, you know, a little over a year out from the from the presidential election. Things are heating up, you know, or starting to heat up. So I would like to get your gauge on, you know, the landscape and if we want to go ahead and put our picks in, see, you know what I mean? See any predictions and such. We can get into that. But shit, man. Yeah, I mean, you know what? Fuck it. Let's start there. How do you feel? Politically, what do you think is shaping up for 2024? What's your predictions? What should we be paying attention to as voters, as people as just, you know, watching everything go on? Yeah, give me your take.
I think the take is it's been heating up. You realize, I'll start with the Republican side. They had their first presidential debate, mm-hmm. Royal Rumble minus Trump. If mm-hmm. you notice, that was in retrospect, I think that was an extremely savvy move for Trump to not even be there, but be constantly discussed. And then he did a follow-up interview on Twitter or X with Tucker Carlson mm-hmm. afterwards, where he made some wild assertions, but and you see it has like some 100+ million views. Who knows? There's a lot of debate if that was a real or if Elon Musk and X goosed those numbers. But Trump is in the news constantly. You know what I mean? He's got more indictments all around the country than pretty much anybody. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to beat any of those. And if you saw, if cats are paying attention to what's going down in Georgia, I got mixed feelings about the Georgia DA, because she's the same one that has YSL, you know, Young Thugs group on RICO charges, but has brought up Trump in RICO charges. But she got the famed mugshot photo, which Trump immediately turned around and turned into millions of dollars in donations with a full merch line, like it was an album rollout. If you see that picture, I know he practiced that. But I think this is going to be one of the – people always say this every year, and I think due to where the country's heading, where the world is heading, it is actually going to be one of the most important presidential elections in recent years. We're facing a lot of issues we never had to face before. Is it even legal, or how can one of the main candidates be up on charges and be going through court cases, like felony court cases, federal and local court cases and investigations, while he's running for president? So that's something the country has never had to go through before.
Right.
In addition to that, we do have our oldest presidential election again, which I know a lot of people feel some type of way about. But I think something people should be paying attention to. We should be paying attention to these Republican debates as that field continues to sharpen and dwindle over the next several months. You've got a few minorities running on the Republican side, which is probably a first in terms of having. You got Vivek, and then you've also got Tim Scott and Nikki Haley, all three minorities running that are viable candidates. So I think people should be paying attention and listening to both sides. Then you've got President Biden and Kamala Harris really turning up the heat. They've been dropping ads all over the place, kind of touting a lot of what the Biden-Harris administration has been doing. I think, obviously, I don't even want to say I'm biased, obviously, having worked directly for the campaign and for the White House and administration, but now kind of being on the outside here, politics is a nonpartisan both company and organization. I think our only political party is really hip hop and was hip hop's generation and the culture's interest. But I do think a lot of the narrative is being lost on both sides. It kind of feels like people don't want any of these options. You see that in some of the polling, but I will say the Biden Harris has definitely put out so much money, so many different policies that have worked, but it's the narrative that's hard, you know, cutting through and breaking the feed. So people are seeing all the good things instead of pointing out to what they wanted him to do or what they wanted the president to do, or where is Kamala Harris, even though I would say fair to say she's all over the world and all over the country every day. It's just what people want to pay attention to. It's not quite as sexy as when Trump was president and he's saying some wild crazy shit every day that the news is reporting on. So I think people need to really be paying attention to the policies. I know it's not as fun. It can be a little more dense than like a quick Instagram post or 15 second TikTok video, but policies in there. But I think it's going to come down to if legally he's allowed to run, I think Trump is still going to win. If I had to early poll, I would say it's going to be a Trump Biden rematch.
Oh, you're saying Trump's going to win presidency. The primary. You're not saying he's going to win the primary. Presidency. Or what do you think?
I think if Trump wins the primary, mm-hmm. I think Biden definitely beats him. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. I think both sides have to do a lot to get enthusiasm up because people feel like they've kind of seen this show mm-hmm. before. But I do think Biden will definitely beat Trump. I think Biden can beat any of them. Mm. Okay. Having been with the president and been around the president up close and personal, I think what people, the narrative is painting, like he's gotten away from the sleepy Joe, especially what you see going on with Mitch McConnell and so many other older senior political leaders and how they, and his freeze ups and who knows what's going on with his health and so many others. I mean, the president is astute and sharp. I've been in direct meetings with him and so forth, so I know he gets it. Sometimes people just want to, you know, maybe they want the gas, they want the memes, they want the funny stuff of him falling and things. To that's what lights up the internet. He fell up and downstairs. And fell off the bike. Damn. But I can tell you, he and the people he's put in place in the cabinet and around his senior advisors, like I said, they've been able to push through more money and policies that'll be long-term effective than, I won't say any president in history, but definitely in recent years. Like you said, he's not the sexy choice. He doesn't get the people going. Like an Obama would, or like even a George H.W. or Clinton does, but I would say he's a legislator. And so sometimes you just need a legislator. And this time, in at times like this, we both need a leader, and he is a strong leader, but we need the policies in place.
Okay.
With all that's been going on.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. You did hit on something. I can only speak for myself, but you said it feels like it's broader than that. It definitely feels like there's a lot of fatigue as far as these candidates go. We feel like we've seen this before. Definitely you see the Mitch McConnell of it all, and even some of the Biden gaffes or whatever it is, the question of, you know, should there be some type of age limit in this political realm? You know, that might be, you know, looked at as ageism, or, you know, it's been unchallenged for so long, but it just, there's certain things like your man freezing up like that is kind of crazy. But beyond that, like, what I've noticed, and maybe it's just the fact that, you know, Biden is the incumbent, and I don't know if etiquette or poor form or whatever, but like, are there any new vital candidates being developed on the Democratic side? Like, I see all these people coming out on the Republican side, and obviously it's a Democratic president, so they got to go get their squad together, you know, while they're away from the White House. But in your estimation, because you're up close and personal, and you see what's going on out there, are there any really, like, viable presidential Democratic candidates that we should kind of keep our eyes open for, ears open for over the next, you know, next couple terms that are coming up in the ranks that we should kind of have an eye on?
I think we start at the top with Vice President Kamala Harris. She's been at the highest levels of government in terms of in California, district attorney. She's been a U.S. senator. She's been the vice president and ready to step in at any day. So those same meetings, outside of some of the work we do with the president in terms of like filming on the digital team, we would film and different events. Any of these important meetings, she's right there, lock and step. So I think she understands both the country and the geopolitical system well. So you got to start with the vice president. That would be obviously historic if she were to win in 2028. First woman, definitely first woman of color to lead America. I think when you get to 2028, it's going to be quite an interesting Democratic field. You hear names like Raphael Warnock, the senator of Georgia. Mm-hmm. You hear Secretary Pete Buttigieg, former mayor, now Secretary of Department of Transportation. He's one of my favorites in terms of having to sit and talk to him. He's a really real dude.
I do not fuck with him. He's the one that did that congestion tax. He's all helming that whole congestion tax in New York City. I can't stand him for that. I'm sorry. That's just me, but keep going. I'm sorry. Keep going. That's just me.
Oh, the congestion tax?
Yeah, he's killing me with that. Come on. But go ahead.
Okay. Another guy who a lot of folks are talking about that's extremely impressive would be Maryland Governor Wes Moore.
Okay.
Some names you may not hear about, but as much now, but could really that are astute, more middle of the road. Look to Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. He's a more moderate Democrat. Kentucky is one of those weird states where it's had Democratic governors consistently, but will have also Republican senators. So statewide is here and there. I played in a race last year and was supporting Charles Booker, a young black man who was running. He was a Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get him elected, but that really got me deep into the state and like visiting the state and seeing the politics there and realized Kentucky could be a place. I'm hearing even Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer has been bellied about. Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania. Even New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu, who now works in the Biden administration and is one of the coolest guys you'll ever meet in person, really has the retail rope line handshake politics down. So you got a couple of the folks like that. And then there's, that's not even to count like the business people who may come out of, who may not be politicians or electeds that may come out of the woodwork. But I think 2028 is going to be another one kind of like 2020 was, or the leading into 2020, where you've got, or well, maybe not 2020, but 2020 and 2016, where you've got both sides having so many. I think President Biden and Harris will win again. And so that would mean both sides will have to go into a contested primary season.
Right.
But that's so far out. There's so many things. You're talking about 2028, and we just got to get through. Who knows what's going to happen in the next year and a half. So yeah. I think so much politics changes with one gaffe, one scandal, one major policy win. You just never know.
Right. Yeah. Nah, that's cool. I appreciate that, the insight, you know, because I was definitely just looking around like, what's going on? Where are the Democrats? Like, who is in the bullpen? And you definitely pulled some names up. So there's some people that I hadn't heard about that I'm going to look into, you know. So that's what's up, man. That's cool. Oh, man. What else is going on in the world?
I would say on that last point.
Yeah.
On that last point. We just got to keep people paying attention. It gets the outside of just the fun and funny stuff. I'm always pushing for people to pay attention, because if you're not informed, if cats aren't informed, they're not trying to keep up, the decisions are just going to get made for you. I'm just hoping we get a little less polarized over these next few years and not just keep talking to the extremes on either side.
But, where would you point people to look to pay attention?
I would say, well, shameless plug, the Politics Podcast. Mm-hmm. We talk about a lot of those issues. But there's a lot of new news sources on politics that I think are really cool. Punch Bowl News.
Mm-hmm.
If you're inside what we call inside the Beltway, inside the DC, Politico and Axios are good news, quick bite news, brief sources, but they'll get you up to politics of the day. Mm-hmm. I get a couple of those newsletters every morning. There's like I said, some of those, even the Cut, the Skim, like some of those will cover politics if you, in terms of like giving some cultural context. But I always encourage people to sign up to a couple newsletters, and you don't treat it as spam.
Mm.
It comes in usually every morning, and probably in 10 or 15 minutes, you can read the headlines and like the summaries of like the news of the day around politics nationally and locally.
Mm-hmm.
But I know most people are just going to pay attention when it gets close to election time. So
yeah,
just keep your eyes and ears open.
Yeah. You know, that's typical. That's when the drama happens, you know. Everybody doesn't tune in during the regular season, but when the playoffs and the finals come, that's when shit gets competitive.
Playoffs and the finals.
You know, so it is what it is. But, you know, if you want to pay attention, you just got a few places to look. Hit Politics, Punch Bowl News, and a few other spots. So y'all tune in if you're trying to stay on point. Yeah. What else is going on? You see your man Prime Time. Talking about, you see your man Deion Sanders out here 3-0 with the with Colorado. Have you been following the primetime what would we call this? His moment of glory.
It's prime time. That's literally all I've been watching these last couple weeks. When you look at it, it's like he became the new LeBron James of like the sports reporting world. You know how like LeBron, anything LeBron does, especially when LeBron was more in the heyday of Miami, early Cleveland, every move he made on the court, off the court is going to lead every sports show. Anytime he says something, I think primetime, he's changed the game. He came in right at the right time with these NIL deals, the transfer portals, all of the height of social media. And he knows, he always says, I've been him. I don't know, have you been keeping up to his clips, like the motivational clips people are taking from his press conferences, whether it's Colorado or even when he was at Jackson State talking about,
mm-hmm.
you ain't make me, so you can't break me. Some of his pregame and postgame speeches, like,
he's the best. He's the best behind a podium when it comes to, you know, the postgame press conference. Like, he's killing press conferences. I mean, he's always been one. I mean, when he was a cornerback, when he was in the league, and when he was, you know, out there, he was about a highlight reel, but he talks shit. It reminds me kind of in the way of, take me back to like Muhammad Ali. You know what I mean? When you see the light on you, and it's so funny how taken people are with black confidence. You know, like, it still feels brazen, even to black people. People are like, wow, he believes in himself. You know, and I think it's contagious, and obviously it's being clipped up and repurposed and repackaged for people to kind of, you know, to pull some adrenaline from, or some motivation, some inspiration from. But yeah, he's a beast, and it feels like a movie. Like, I really would love to see him go undefeated this season. Just feels like this. It feels like a Disney movie on a certain level. Just the writing and the suspense. This last game, you know, the whole, you know, I typically, whatever the other coach said, I typically take my sunglasses off and my hat off when I speak to somebody. It's like, all right. Then it looked like he was about to lose that game.
His mama.
And
the mother thing, the mother part.
My mama told me that. Yeah, yeah.
And then he brings his, did you see his mom come in and dress the team? Did you see that clip?
Oh, no, I didn't see all that. See, now everybody trying to have a clip off. That. Yeah, send me that. But see, that's the thing.
His mom.
Go ahead. Talk about it.
I was going to say, his mom went in heavy. He brought his mom in. First of all, he had Master P and The Rock in the pregame, like, warm up in the locker room.
Oh, you mean Dion brought his moms?
Dion brought his mom.
Oh, I thought you.
After that guy's.
Oh, I thought you meant the other guy brought his mom in. Oh, okay. So Dion brought his moms out. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And his mom was like, his mom said, I always told you to believe in yourself. Mm. But sometimes when you got to kick ass. And then you hear in the background his other son, Shiloh, like, yeah, grandma, we ain't having that. Yeah, grandma, we ain't having that.
Hilarious.
And everybody, like, but the fact that she says, when you got to kick ass, the team exploded. Yeah. The team exploded. He brought his mom in to hype the team up. So it's, I mean,
Apple,
the fact
don't
that
fall
he got
far.
Every,
yeah.
Nah.
Yeah, she got bars too. Everybody
and
in
you
the
saw
studio.
The glasses move, right?
I heard
glass sunglasses move.
I heard he sold, what, 1.5 million sunglasses or something like that? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, something. Yeah.
He's doing a lot. And I think it's all exciting until his loss. I hope he go undefeated, because it feels good. Feels great. Everybody's excited. And it was also funny to me too, and maybe I'm a few weeks late on this because I talk to friends of mine in the group chat. But it's funny how, you know, sometimes all you got to do is win and, you know, the fans will come back, you know, because there was a moment where Deion was a little polarizing. When he left Jackson State, a lot of people was kind of throwing in the towel on him, calling him all types of names, sellout, this, that, and the other thing. He done left the black children. You know what I'm saying? He done sold a dream and abandoned all of that shit, and then went over here to this white program. And now you don't really hear that no more. I don't know. It's just interesting. Again, like, let me say this. I'm a casual when it comes to sports and all of this shit. So I just pay attention to, like, the drama of it all. And, you know, like I said, Deion is the current king of the press conference. So he's giving you a whole lot of slick shit to talk about. But, you know, it's exciting. But right now, I like it. I'm hoping that they go as far as they go. I hope they win the whole shit and go undefeated. That would be beautiful. But we will see.
The hard part about it with college football.
Uh-huh.
I'm a big college football fan. I was raised in Ohio. Ohio State is was my unofficial team. I was in Cleveland, raised in Cleveland when they got taken away and became the Baltimore Ravens. So that was right when I was in high school, so I adopted
Ohio State. Wait, say it again? What happened?
I don't know if you remember this. Back in the day, in the late 90s, it was an owner, Art Modell.
I remember his name, yeah.
He tried to get a new stadium built in Cleveland. We had a real old raggedy stadium.
For the Browns?
For the Browns.
Okay.
And, excuse me, and he didn't get the, whatever the money from the city, it didn't pass. I was in high school, so I was casually paying attention until it became real that, hey, I'm going to move the team if you don't. So they moved the Browns, I believe in 96, 7, 8. Viewers fact check me there. But in the mid to late 90s, he moved the Browns to Baltimore, and that's when they became the Ravens. So he was the first owner of the Baltimore Ravens before the Bashotti family.
Shit. Wait a minute. Hold on. Slow down for a second. Again, I'm a casual. They all know this. Wait a minute. There's no more Cleveland Browns? There hasn't been a Cleveland Browns since the 90s?
No. All right. The Browns, and I'm looking it up. Browns in the 96 season left. And then we had no team. There were no Browns for a few years.
Okay.
And they became Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens started. So then a new owner came in, and then they restarted the Cleveland Browns.
Gotcha.
We have the Browns, but we've never been really good since then.
Right.
But I brought that up as a point. Those couple years are right when I'm starting to follow football in high school, in early high school. So our de facto team was the Ohio State Buckeyes.
And then
I had some people from my high school go play there. And luckily, Ohio State is almost as good as like top 3-4 team in the country every year. So I've always, like, when people say, "What's your football team?" It's like Ohio State. Mm. And like, did you go there? Like, nah, but I'm from Ohio, and everybody rides for Ohio State. So I follow college football through the eyes of Ohio State and who they play. But I'm still a casual. But the thing about, as it applies to Deion, man, he got to win, because when you lose one game in college football, especially if you lose it against an unranked opponent, that's why it would have been disastrous if he'd lost to Colorado State.
Right.
All your momentum is gone. Like, the likelihood of you going to a championship game, national championship playoff, is kind of out the window. You know, Deion's got Oregon and USC. The other guy, Caleb Williams, is a cold quarterback. I've been seeing him on – he must be getting a lot of money, because I haven't seen him on commercials. His NIL deals must be crazy, because I haven't seen him on a lot of commercials. But he got them over the next 2 weeks. And so if he loses to one of them, which people think he will, because those teams are ranked way much higher and considered to be a lot better.
Right.
I'm curious to see, are people still going to be on Deion and slandering Deion or slandering the team? Because it's like, hey, I mean – if they do lose, I mean, or USC is like number 3, number 4 in the nation. Oregon's in the top 10.
Right.
So it's like, technically, those teams should win. But it's – so Deion's smart to get all this hype now before they do win. But do you believe? That's what he said, you know. Do you believe?
Right. Yeah, nah, he know how to sell it. And shit, you know, I feel like prior to the Mayweather era – you know, there was, and I still think there is value, and not value is not even the virtue, might even be a better word for it, but there's some virtue in rebounding from a loss. You know, like, you know, like if you look at boxing before the Mayweather era, it wasn't always this desire to go undefeated. Obviously, nobody wanted to lose, but some of the best fights were rematches, you know. So if there's a up, you know, if you fall and you come back up, it's damn near just as dramatic. You know, if you just winning, you know what I mean? Some people could kind of, I don't want to say, I mean, I think in this one season, if he went undefeated, the shit would be amazing. But after a while, if you just somebody that's just winning, people start to feel like, oh, well, that's just what they do. You know, so maybe there should be a little bit of drama in this all. So we'll see. Do you believe is the question. Do you believe? Cam, do you believe?
And I believe. Okay. I believe. Okay. I mean, I
well,
believe.
There you go.
I mean,
you ain't sound like
I'm
it.
Trying
like
you... sunglasses.
Oh, okay. Are you trying to find the sunglasses? About to buy you a pair?
I'm definitely, those sunglasses are crazy. I mean, I believe that Deion is no less than two. Deion in Colorado, because I think he's going to stay in Colorado at least for another year or two. Mm-hmm. I think he is no less than 2 to 3 years away from competing for a national championship. Mm. I mean,
I'm
of the belief, like I want to believe that he's going to go undefeated. If he did, it's the perfect Disney movie.
Yeah. And
everybody's going to get paid. But even if he loses a couple games and they don't go to the championship,
right,
but they do go to a bowl game, he's got a narrative. And think about what all he did in 1 year in terms of all the transfer portals and everything he had to do. He was rushing to leave Jackson State and then jump into this. Now he has a full recruiting year. Talking about he can go into any home in America. People know who he is. And then everybody wants to play for him. He connects. And look, he's raising the profile of so many of his star players. Because, I mean, you got Shador. You got the two-way guy that got hurt, Travis Hunter. Mm-hmm. His son, Cam and Mace came up with a name for his son, Shador. They call him Tupac Shador. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But I've been seeing these, you know, the little vignettes they do of like Saturday morning or Sunday morning game day around certain players and go back to their hometown. It was like two or three of his players that weren't initially getting all the hype got the little ESPN 5-10 minute segment about their hometown and how they grew up, where they used to play, now why they came over. So he can sell that to anybody. Like, man, I got KFC, I've got Nike, I've got sunglasses. He's going to have money for him. He's going to have star power for him. And then he's really about making them better men. And so I think anybody would be crazy to turn down a meeting with Deion. So if he gets a full year of recruiting, and then not counting the transfer portal, he could probably go and like free agency, go pick up anybody who wants to leave from around the country. They are only going to get better.
Yeah, that's true. That's what's up. Well, we'll be paying attention.
And if he wins the championship,
crazy.
Oh my gosh. It's going to be crazy. You won't be able to tell that man nothing.
Nah, you can't tell him shit now. So you already know it's going to be bananas, but yeah, man. We're going to be tuned in. Speaking of other black sports excellent, the Sha'Carri Richardson stories, she's popping too. Again, I'm a casual. I'm just looking at the highlights. I just see her popping up on my algorithm going crazy. So, yeah, shout out to her. She doing her thing. But this is something, again, black sports excellence. Did you know? You familiar with the Jumpman logo, right?
Yeah, of course.
The Jordan Jumpman logo, right? Now, do you know that photo in which Jordan was taking, you know, doing that dunk? You know he was wearing New Balances?
Nah. Yeah. Where you hear that from?
I mean, it's the truth. He was wearing New Balance and shit. I'll tell you where I heard it from. Well, Joe Fresh Goods is a, you know, sneaker designer. Maybe even a clothing designer initially from out of Chicago. He's done a lot of cool collabs with New Balance. And most recently he's been doing this, he's done this little short run. I forget what it's called. What If? Basically, he was going through a Life magazine. This was, what year was this? This was years ago. Life magazine, there was an image in Life magazine captured, created by Jacobus Co. Rentmeester. This is in 1984, special issue of Life ahead of the Summer Olympics in Los Angeles. And for the issue, you know, he shot photos of American Olympians like Carl Lewis, Greg Louganis, and Jordan, who played on the U.S. men's national basketball team. So basically, I think he had 20 minutes to shoot Jordan, and He traveled to the University of North Carolina campus in 84. It was told he had, you know, just 20 minutes to make images of Jordan. Jordan wore an obscure New Balance model in all white. Opinion is somewhat split on whether it was a New Balance 425 or 480. I'm quoting this article on, it's on complex.com. Shout out to Brendan Dunn who wrote it. Long story short, Joe Fresh Goods is doing like a short run of the sneaker. I want to say, is he doing the 480? What's the 480 he's doing? He's doing a limited version of the 650. I guess he couldn't do the 480. But basically the story behind the sneaker, because you know that every time people are selling sneakers, there's always a story behind it. And Joe Fresh Goods is kind of like one of the best storytellers when it comes to these sneaker collabs. He's had some interesting ones, fresh clothes, outside clothes, whatever. But this one is, the story behind that is, what if the story was different? So basically just kind of alluded to the fact of, what if Jordan stayed with New Balance type shit? And the fact that most people, because that, you know, that image, which it was a whole big copyright issue that went down, but that image is synonymous with Jordan, Jumpman, Nike, you know, that brand. But the thing is, the fucking sneakers he had on in that shot were New Balances. So I thought that was kind of crazy. So yeah. Just a little.
Can they really sue for that, though?
Well, they tried to sue. Now, again, I'm reading the thing. There was I forget who.
Because it's a silhouette. And you don't know what kind of shoes he got on.
No, I don't think they were suing for that. I think they were suing for just using the image, you know, because the image was basically taken by this photographer, you know, and then it was traced outline. So Nike allegedly borrowed the image, you know what I mean, and used it to create the, you know, a logo. So if you're using my image to create IP, that's a lawsuit. You know what I mean? So if you're not breaking me off, you know? So that's what it was. Nike's creative director was instrumental in facilitated a payment. He got paid $150 in order to grant Nike limited use of the two transparencies of the further. I don't want to read too much of this on the pod. Y'all can go on
$150.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
$50 billion later.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That shit is, yeah, that's, whoo-wee, that's offensive. But anyway, so, you know, just a little factoid. But while we in the weeds on, I don't say lawsuits, but images and people using images without proper permission, what you think of this whole Drake and Halle Berry situation? Are you familiar?
Yes, and kudos to your transition game today.
Oh, thank you, brother. I appreciate that. I'm trying out here. Go ahead.
Slime me out. You heard it? You heard the song yet?
I heard the song once. I wanted to listen back again to make sure it was as whack as I thought it was the first time I heard it, but I didn't get the chance. But yeah, on the first listen, I was like, this ain't it. But that was the first listen. How do you feel about it?
The slime me out as a reference or as like a slang is wild.
It's very pause worthy.
I mean, that's this,
but go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's this generation. That's how, I mean, there's a few other songs out there called Slime Me Out, Slime You Out that I've heard. I think Young Thug might even have one. The picture with Halle Berry, I don't even remember that. But yeah, I mean, your girl Halle Berry called Drake out, hit him with a subliminal, then hit him with a direct on Instagram saying his people reached out to her people asking to use it. Then she said no, he still went ahead and used it. And I think he even, if you look on like streaming networks, when you listen to the song, That picture is not actually used. It's just using an image or a cover art from the album that's supposed to drop this week.
Right.
So he just posted that on his Instagram. But, you know, Drake got 100 plus million followers across every social media. So him putting a picture out, even if it's not the official picture, it's going to feel like the official picture.
Right.
And then she came at him and said it was a big F you. I don't like Drake.
She said, I don't like Drake.
Well, she said somebody, I think I'm not quoting it directly, but something to the effect of when somebody who you admire, basically disrespects you. And I know she used the term F.
She said she took it as a fuck you to me. Yeah. Go ahead.
And I get it, but I think all she did was make people want to listen to the song. Like you said, the song felt a little mid. SZA came through. But those types of Drake songs are not usually the songs I'm listening to. I have some, you know what I mean? That's not him usually rapping or with the bars, even though he does have, he sings some bars in that song. He makes some clever references, and he got a couple good metaphors in there. In both his first and last verse. I had to ask a couple of my homegirls what they thought, because they're into more of the sing-song R&B crooner Drake. Right. But it's like, I haven't heard anybody who's like, oh, I love this song. And you know, SZA is hot, is super hot right now. So I was thinking like, oh, he got SZA on it, so y'all gonna love this song. And they're like, I think it's more the topic matter. He's essentially talking about sliming a girl out or disrespecting and then like putting her on blast or using her and stuff like that, using her. Running through her essentially, or calling her out, putting her on Front Street. So I haven't heard anybody. And I haven't heard anybody say anything that really, what's the word I'm looking for? Saying they really love it. I've heard like, oh, it's cool. So hopefully when this album drop, it's it. But the fact that he just blatantly disrespect Halle Berry, all he did was bring more buzz and heat to and made people listen to a song that I think is mid at best.
Yeah. And, you know, Halle from Cleveland, too. So I thought you was going to hold it down a little stronger, but
it's a public image.
I get it. See, this is what I thought. I didn't realize it till you said this. And now it sounds like his people talk to her people. I thought it was more of a, he reached out personally and said, yo, I'd like to use this image. What do you think? And she said no. And he still went ahead. Cause that's foul. Now, if it's people talking to people, maybe shit got lost in translation, which I doubt. But he definitely pulled his whole, well, not really. I was going to say he kind of moved on his whole don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness situation. But he asked for permission and, you know, I guess he don't give a fuck. Then it was a thought that I got in my little fan fiction, which I don't believe this theory pans out because I don't believe there's anything for Halle to gain from this. But if this is just some little rollout theater, you know, this whole, I asked you and you said no and you, because this album is, what is it, For All the Dogs? This way he going to be on his dog shit. You know, he's sliming women out and shitting on them and all of this. Like, this is supposed to be heel turn Drake, where he getting really leaning into the womanizer persona or whatever. So maybe this whole little back and forth with Halle was like nobody safe type shit. And then at the, when the album comes out, they take a bow. They'd be like, oh, it was a sketch. But I don't think Halle would, you know.
I don't think Halle down for that.
Halle ain't down for that. Halle got a fucking Oscar. She don't need to do Twitter theater. But that was
exactly.
Just.
And he's not paying her.
Yeah, he probably ain't
I know
paying
he's not paying her.
But this is another question I got. Well, this is the thing. And I listened to Slimy Out once. And not even just that, but just as of late. Drake's been getting real punny on the mic. It's like a lot of puns. Like, they're not even the illest bars. They're just a lot of little puns. And it's like real cutesy type shit that's kind of like, maybe I've aged out of it. I'm a Drake fan. I do fuck with the kid. I will say, I think Drake benefits from the momentum that he has created. You know, I think if we look at, what's the last three projects? Was it Honestly Nevermind? Was the that was like the dance music joint.
Then dance hall.
dance. Well, no, that was like more dance. That was like,
I mean, not dance hall, dance yeah, like that, yeah, the like club, New yeah. Jersey club mix, yeah, club mix,
all stuff, of that type yeah. of shit. So there was that. Well, CLB, Certified Lover Boy,
and then her loss.
And if we looking at the collective of that, would people fail? I don't know if they really talk about it a lot. It'd be a lot of mid on these projects. It'd be a lot of mid. There'll be a little bit of there'll be some remnants that are fire or okay that are saving. But collectively, when you go back, and maybe it's just me, and it might not just be just the Drake, because I'm not Johnny heavy rotation recently. You know, I listen to an album just to be in the conversation, plug, about what's going on with it, just to be relevant to, okay, I heard it, blah, blah, blah. It's been a minute since I've heard an album that's made me run it back. But I will say the last few times, because the Drake hype is maybe only surpassed by maybe Beyonce hype. I don't know who else got that level of hype. You know what I mean? I mean, Taylor Swift, but I'm not even putting her in that realm. But Taylor Swift, yeah, definitely. So there's a few people
that are. You saying he live hype to hype? He's hype. He has to find an edge every time he drops something.
I feel like he's been, at least these last three projects, honestly, never mind. I actually respect it because he took a chance on that one. Her Lost, I gotta go back again. CLB, I haven't gone back in a while. You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is, I don't know if it's been an album to where it was like, oh, this shit is fire front to back, like, or predominantly fire. This is me. Again, I'm not the biggest Drake fan, but from what my own purview, I feel like, yeah, I think he is living off the momentum of his hype. And I hope that maybe this one lives up to it, because that's what he's kind of leaning into. He's got people saying, yo, nah, this one here. And I don't know if I heard that before. I know, honestly, never mind. It was like, yo, I'm dropping this shit at the end of the week. I even believe the same thing for Her Loss. These were kind of like, yo, it's coming out immediately. CLB, there was a bit of a roll. Honestly, never mind was definitely, I'm dropping it next week. I remember that.
That was honestly never mind. But Her Loss, I think you got to go back and Her Loss was my favorite album of last year.
No, like, what I'm saying loss, is he I'm, got, no, I'm not saying I'm not talking about the quant. We'll talk about that in a second. But I'm talking about as far as dropping it. Like, he kind of dropped it pretty fast. He was like, "This is it." He announced it with not much time on the clock. Whereas this one, he's been announcing it for months, and he's been kind of saying, "Yo, this one here." Nah, y'all, if y'all are the fans that I know y'all are, you're going to fuck with it. Like, he's been really speaking this one up. Yeah. I don't think he's been selling the last three albums like this. I could be wrong about CLB, but definitely Her Loss and Honestly Never Mind, they were kind of like, boom, here you go. Boom, here you go. Enjoy. Yeah, enjoy. This one, he's like, nah. This shit?
Because he put out a book. He put out like, then he put out like a book.
It doesn't matter like or some a, shit a book, like that. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's been talking about, I thought this was supposed to drop in the summer. I think gone are the days where people can drop an album out of nowhere and do the same type of numbers. Travis Scott just did it. You heard rumblings. He had an album coming, then it just came out. But I think that's some record label trickeration to save money on the rollout and the marketing and so forth. But that's not meant for everybody. I'm curious to if it's some behind the scenes in terms of related to his deal, like if he has to hit a certain number of record sales or spins and so forth around this so he can get a new deal. You know what I mean? Drake in that. Did you see that freestyle he did?
Combination. Combination. Yeah. That's all I remember from the whole shit is combination. That's it. That says a lot about the freestyle.
I remember he had a line in there like, I got a $200 million deal on the table. I mean, he could have been gassing it up and talking about anything. Uh-huh. But I think with this album, I hear you, him hyping it up and him doing more. He's been doing more press, even though like the press with he did the conversation with Lil Yachty not too long ago. He did I'm forgetting the young white girl who was like a weird. They're sitting in the bed. doing that conversation and stuff like that. So he's been doing a little bit of a press rollout for it. I think it's, honestly, I think we overthinking it. Drake's team is so calculated, and he has so many cross promotions, and he recognizes he's on top. Even if the albums are mid, all he knows is he needs one or two mega singles that are gonna get people talking. Sometimes those are the singles that come out before the album or right when the album. Sometimes those are the singles that the people choose. Like Jimmy Cooks, the song he did off of Honestly Nevermind. Like he put out that video where he was like trying to marry all these women. I don't even remember what that song was called or what it sounds like. I don't know why he chose that one, but the songs that stuck out were Sticky, where you start hearing that, and then you hear the Jimmy Cooks record, which like is the main radio hit with him and 21 Savage. And so sometimes the people find the single, sometimes they find the single. I think this is something maybe, I think it could be either related to the business or we might be overthinking it, and this is just Drake just doing something different. You know what I mean? Like he's like, you know what? Let me go about it this way this time. Like he's gotta find way. Like when you're at the top, you know how they say it's hard to get to the top, but it's way harder to stay at the top. And he's essentially been stayed at or near the top since his first album, definitely since his second album. So him constantly reinventing, it's not always about the music. It's about the moves. It's about the barbershop talk. It's about who he's dating, who he's dissing. Then it comes back to being about the songs and the music. It's about a stunt. Think about God's Plan. God's Plan was a good song, but the stunt of like, I'm about to give away $1 million in my music video, like took that to the Grammys and best song and one of his highest charting records ever. And I would say if the video wasn't like that, where he gave away $1 million, I don't think it would have been, that song would have been as big. So I think this is the controversy. I hear you on trying to jump from person to person and different things. I think Drake is way more cold-blooded than we realize. Like, so he's willing to really push any button he can, and he knows he's at the top, so he's like, this is my thing. Why not try something different? So I don't know. It's a lot of pressure. Are you looking forward to this album?
Not really. I mean, I'm gonna listen to it. This is the question that I'm asking you, because you said we overthink it, which is interesting, right? And maybe the narrative is different now. Maybe the conversation is different. Like I said, like I'm not a active. This is the thing that I've noticed about music as of late, you know, especially in the social media era. It feels like there's not much critique like there used to be. It's just a lot of standing and hating. It's either classic or trash. It's either you are standing this shit or you a fucking hater. The people, like when there's a nuanced conversation of is this good or is this whatever, there seems to be not much tolerance for that, right? So my question is, because what I was saying, and it even goes beyond Drake, but we're talking about Drake since he has this album coming up. And to be fair, I'm not going to say that I'm going to listen to it, but if I'm looking at the track record, my expectations are in check, right? But my question is, are we at the point to where now, like you talked about all of the other ancillary shit, do albums even matter? Do albums even matter? And then my second question for you is, what is your album of the year if you have one?
I'm gonna shock you with this, my second album of the year, because I've publicly proclaimed this, and I've been trying to get everybody on this train. But to the first thing, do albums matter? I think they still do. I think they don't matter in the context, like the five mics, the Source Mic Awards doesn't matter anymore. If you win Grammy for album of the year, does that really matter to the culture? I think culturally, albums don't matter in the same way, but I think that's because of the society and where we are. We're in a hyper microwave air fryer culture where everything is like, what can I do and get done quickly? Mm-hmm. And we're moving on. Like, we, it's content overload. So you don't even have enough time to sit with any album, TV show, movie before it's on to the next one, because there's so much content. And then you watching TikTok, Instagram, YouTube shorts, like, it's just content overload. So it's hard to for something to gain consistent traction. Back, you know, when album cycles used to be almost 2 years, sometimes three if it was a big album, and now it's, you lucky if it's 2 weeks or a month that people are still checking in on the album. But I think delivering, you still got to deliver albums in a way to service fans, because singles, if you're just a single artist, single and a feature artist, people don't really get your narrative. And it's just like that. I think that's even more pressure. If people who just drop singles,
and Cardi B,
all I care about it, Cardi, but Cardi B has so much more going on that you bought into Cardi B. Okay. She just got, she also has good music. Think about Cardi B is like, is, I would say, a mixed bag at best of her singles. Like,
but go ahead. Singles, I don't want to throw you off. Drop. I don't want to throw you off. Keep going.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was about to say OT Genesis. OT Genesis is a single dude. OT Genesis, if you look at his track record, he got some banging ass singles. He never put album out. Mm-hmm. But also, you're not thinking about OT Genesis. Are you a real fan? Like, no, you just like the songs he put out. So I think you still need to have albums to give fans and people who like you, like, something to buy into, something for you to tour off of. If you want to really tour and be here for a long period of time, I think it's going to be interesting to see the people who've come out in the last few years since we've been in this new phase, how long, how well they fare in 10, 20 years, how well they fare. Are they going to be able to do the Legends of Hip Hop tour in 20 years or 15 years? If they don't have albums, or they don't have, even if they're not classic albums, but they, you got to have some album cuts. Because think about some of your favorite songs from any of your favorite artists. Half the time, it's not just the singles. It's an album cut. It's a song that didn't get a video, or a song that may have got a video but wasn't a main single. But a lot of people, when you think about what your favorite songs are, especially in rap, like those album cuts that you really liked, or those collabs where they had posse cuts and things like that that just weren't singles, mm-hmm. but that's what made you more of a fan, and that's what you're going back and listen to outside of the thing that they try to program you to love, which is the radio hit or the TikTok hit or things of that nature. So I think albums definitely still matter. They just don't, they don't have the impact that, like, having a quote unquote classic album, because, like, you're right, that classic or trash is like a terrible conversation, but I think that's with anything. People just don't want to see criticism online anymore. So, but I mean, I don't know. I'm curious, do you think albums matter? Like, what's the last album you've had on repeat, maybe from the last 4 or 5 years, or album you revisit outside of the big single that everybody knows?
I think albums matter. One, I do think albums matter. I do think, and I'll say this particularly about what I've noticed with Drake in particular, is a lot of his shit will age better than you would expect it to. In the moment, it may not be mind blowing, but when I go back to it, I'm like, okay, all right, I see the actual body of work a little better, right? So I do think that happens. Similar to the Kendrick album, like, I like the Kendrick album a lot. When I first got it, it was a little dense up front. When I first listened to it, I was like, okay, this shit heavy. This shit sound like I'm in his therapy sessions, you know? It was a lot. Double album, all of that shit. But then I would go back, and more I found myself going back, revisiting it. So I thought that was one of those really good albums. I thought the SZA album was a solid album. I thought the Killer Mike album is a solid album. I'm trying to think who else has put out albums that I've revisited heavy. I can't think of anything beyond those right now off the top of the head that I listen to like a full album. You know, but I think that you know, we're talking about social media. I think that one thing about social media is, since it's so congested and there's so many people with so many things to say, that, you know, it's still a hot take era. So nuance doesn't move as fast as a hot take. So if you say that shit trash, people are going to either attack you or they're going to agree. You know, but if you say, hey, you know, the drums on number six could have been a little better, I felt like, you know what I mean, the songwriting on that, niggas, nobody trying to hear all that. Nobody trying to read all of that. But I'm not saying that that doesn't matter. And maybe, again, like, I'm 45, so I'm different. I grew up on, I just listened to the Diggable Planet, first Diggable Planets album just this past weekend. And I will say this, just on some other shit. There's a song on the new, on the old Diggable, the first Diggable Planets album called La Femme Fatale, which is about abortion. And it's probably one of the most relevant records about abortion 30 years to this day, which is crazy to me. It blew my mind. But long story short, yes, albums, I would like to think albums still matter. But I, on another level, I think podcasts have killed the album. That's where a lot of people kind of devote a little bit of their attention span. And if we're going to listen to the music, we're going to listen to a playlist, we're going to listen to quick shit, whatever, whatever. But to hold the attention for a full album might be, it might not be in vogue in this moment. So that's.
You know what's killing the album?
What?
What I think is killing the album is this the streaming algorithm where cats got to drop 20 and 25 song albums. It's like the likelihood that you're going to, even the Drake did it with Scorpion, even CLB probably got like 18 to 20 songs or something, but they're trying to game the system for streaming. And now they're releasing so much mid or songs that would have never got released or at least got worked on more.
But does that really work? Because even these albums with like 20 plus songs on there, there might be one or two that get added to these playlists. So it's like,
but it works. It's what they're doing is allowing for continual plays. Is that if you let an album play and it only has say 11 songs, once I'm done with it, I'm moving on to the next thing. But if I'm gonna get more streaming and more time listened, if I need to go through 20 songs, even if I don't like them, I'm giving 20 songs a listen versus 11, and that. I guess the numbers game there adds up to where it literally comes down to streams and clicks and purchases and how the money is paid out.
Right.
It incentivizes, especially in hip hop, it incentivizes cats to do longer albums. And I think that's killing it, because you used to, when you go back thinking about Michael Jackson or somebody like that, he's got 10 songs, 11 songs. But they're the best 10, 11 songs you could have ever made. And like, they were carefully curated and tweaked, and all the care that goes into giving you the best music, as opposed to, you know what, it's content is king. And I'm going to still make like a song. Now I'm pretty sure artists, when they're thinking about the money that they can make and how they make money and how labels are thinking about money they can make, is like, even if you give me a half-ass song, I'd rather put it out there, because, yeah, they don't really care about it damaging the brand of the artist. They care about how many people are listening and streaming and how many different songs they can get and how much content they can get out there. So I think that's killing people's enthusiasm over the last few years. Plus, there's no album rollouts. Like, it's such a crowded marketplace. Like, everybody, Beyonce set the standard, and people all thought they were Beyonce can do a surprise album. And even, but when Beyonce drops a surprise album, she'll drop a surprise. That first one was Lemonade, I think it was, or the one before that, the Beyonce album.
It was Beyonce.
Yeah. And she drops an album and then drops a video for every single song. And they're all artistic. And she still had a full rollout. You know what I mean? Like, corporate collaborations, almost like a movie and stuff like that. But I think, now that there's no rollout, there's little anticipation. The videos, I mean, videos have gotten cheap for a while. There's nowhere to see videos outside of YouTube, so I got to actually look for it. It's not put in my face like it was on TRL or 106 in Park or even MTV Jam, so I'm not sitting around watching music videos. I'm not anticipating stuff. Like, I think the album rollout, so their albums used to feel like events. Even if you did a rollout and your album didn't do well, at least it was still some kind of buildup. So there's no buildup. Then when I do get the album, it's got 10 too many songs on it. So I'm less enthusiastic about listening to a whole album where you give me 20 tracks and it's like, man, it's an hour and a half. I ain't got an hour and a half. And like you said, people are listening to podcasts and YouTube and all that. I think it's killing the energy of the album. But you still, if you want to tour, you want to be here for a long time, you want to have real fans, you got to have an album. Otherwise, you're going to get the short end of the stick in 20 years when all you can do is two or three singles. And you better hope your singles are so big, like your singles are so big that people still want to hear you. And you know, I mean, once your career and once the spotlight's away from you, once you're out of you too old.
Okay. You didn't answer my question. What was your album of the year? You said you got a shocking answer.
My album of the year is Key Glock's Glaucoma 2, the deluxe version.
Okay.
I'm going to challenge you. Go back and listen. Go. It came out, I think Glaucoma came out earlier this year, spring. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Young Dolph super fan. If you look at my title, all time top played songs, like the top 10 is like five of them are Young Dolph songs. And one of them is a Key Glock song.
Okay.
But so I've always was hip to Young Dolph. And so I got hip to Key Glock because mm-hmm. it was his nephew or cousin, and it was also his artist. But I wasn't on Key Glock for his first few albums and mixtapes. But something about I saw the Rap Radar podcast interviewed him, mm-hmm. and they were bigging up the album, like, yo, this is definitely your best body of work. And his last album was Yellow Tape 2. Mm-hmm. And he had a couple songs on there that were big on TikTok, but also like Ambition for the Cash, Channel 5. I mean, he finds some banging ass beats, mm-hmm. and he has some great hooks, and he got some clever lines. It's not just all super street shit. But when I saw that Rap Radar podcast come out early this year, I was like, let me go back and listen to Glaucoma, because I liked the first single. It was cool, but it wasn't nothing I was listening to. Then I found my song of the year. It's a song because it's called Work, 2 minute song. But that's been my motivational workout song when I'm like, you know, as you building a business or you just all the different things you said I was involved in before. You need those songs that get you focused, get you hype. I would listen to that song Work. Like it's a song that actually translates. I'm over 40 now too, and I'm surprised that I'm liking a 24-year-old street artist from Memphis, but Glaucoma 2 bangs. Like I think the deluxe version may have like 18, 17 songs. Mm-hmm. 13 to 14 of them are hits.
Okay.
Or at least they hit. I don't think they'd be mainstream hits. Uh-huh. They're not mainstream hits, uh-huh. but it's definitely car music. It's either car or really loud music. You got make sure either when you listen to it, you got some good speakers, mm-hmm. or if you're going somewhere for about 30, 45 minutes, put that joint in, put the Penny, 2 for 1, where he switches up the flow and switches up the beat in the song, Money Over Hoes, Work, Dirt, Randy Orton, like, I can go on and on, but he's got some banger. Chromosome, listen to that. Watch that. The music video is dope. Chromosome, he just dropped that not too long ago. I've just been on Key Glock for some reason. I posted it on Instagram a few times. Mm-hmm. I've been using a couple of those songs as like the soundtrack to some of my Instagram videos. Like that joint goes hard. He's got good lyrics. Like, he's riding the beat well. He's got crazy beats. And it's not all straight shoot 'em up type stuff where it's like, man, I can't connect to this because that's not the life I'm living. It's not the energy I got. But I think you should check out Glaucoma 2, the deluxe version. It's the blue cover. The original one is a red cover. But Glaucoma, because Glaucoma 1 was his first ever like album. Mixtape he ever put out. So this is part 2. Okay. That joint goes hard.
All right.
I promise you, you'll see it on some lists at the end of the year in terms of like best rap albums of the year.
Okay.
It's straight rap though. No R&B. None of that.
Yeah, I've heard. I had a friend of mine big up this Key Glock project. So I'm going to check it out. Glaucoma 2. The red cover. Check that
no,
shit
the, blue cover.
The blue cover. No, pardon the blue cover. The blue cover. Pardon. Pardon.
Don't fuck it up. Deluxe version.
The blue boy. All right. Glaucoma 2. What's your
album of the year?
Like I said, I think right now it's probably Killer Mike's Michael. It might be. And the funny thing is I don't even go back to it that often. You know, it's still developing, but when I do go back to it, I find some other shit to it. And he just dropped the deluxe version. Speaking of deluxe versions, and there's, you know, typically sometimes when they do the deluxe shit, it just kind of be some old throwaway songs tacked on. And I feel like these songs that he tacked on actually added more to the project. So at the moment, it's probably Michael. At the moment. I gotta really sit with a lot of different things and revisit a few different things. But at the moment, my immediate choice is Michael. But I feel like there's not much competition out there, album-wise. There's a lot of cool songs out there, but album-wise, I don't feel like there's a lot of competition. But y'all let us know in the comments, what's your album of the year, and do albums even matter? Let us know that. And, I think it's time for us to get out of here. Rest in peace to Winning Time. HBO canceled that after 2 seasons.
They did?
Yeah, they canceled that shit. It's not coming back. Uh-huh. And the little finale kind of felt like they knew they was getting canceled. And they did a finale after 7 episodes. HBO been real quick with that axe these past couple months. They chopping shit up. Get up out of here. Sorry. Take it easy. But,
They ended that weekend show after like 4 episodes.
The Idol. Yeah. A little bit more than 4. Yeah, The Idol. Yeah, they got that shit up out of here. It was, it could have been better, but, you know, it was what it was. Before we get out of here, Cam, tell the people where you're going to be at, where they can find you at, what you got, what you're looking forward to, and then we're going to transform.
Yo, man, thanks again. I would say follow me on Instagram is my main social media, so Mr. Cameron Calvin, MrCameron Calvin, CALVIN. You could also follow Hip_Politics on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, or X, I should say, Facebook, the whole nine. Hip Politics Podcast Season 3 is in production. I got a couple great interviews already in the can. A few, we're going to be interviewing Shine and Eric Sermon this week, actor Laz Alonso, Congressman Jamal Bowman, a few other big names that still holding out for a Vice President Kamala Harris interview. I'm going to put that in the air. Hopefully that comes too. But we're in production right now. It's going to debut soon, probably in the next, like I said, within the next month in terms of Season 3. There's been a lot of anticipation, but we got a full rollout coming for that. This week, I'm out in D.C. for this week. It is a Congressional Black Caucus Week's annual conference, which is like Black Political Super Bowl. So check out. I'm moderating the Hip Hop and Politics panel featuring like Kevin Lyles, Shine, Eric Sermon. We got a ton of events. Rick Ross will be out here. Monica, Beanie Siegel, Freeway, Diddy, Quavo. A lot of different stuff for this conference over the next couple weeks. And then I'm going my first European trip in a week, starting next week. I'm going headed out to France to go see Usher.
Okay.
And go see Usher and also do a surprise podcast interview while I'm out there. So I'm excited about that. But again, tap into the Hip Politics movement, or tap into me, Mr. Cameron Calvin. We're going into, and then I would say they're going to find me back on your podcast, or if you ever need any questions as we heat up into the political season, the one last message I would say to all the listeners is that I know we're looking at 2024, but there's elections and things going on this November around the country now. So tap in every year, even in the off years of where your local elections are happening. I'm on the voting train. I think it still matters. I know it still matters. So I'm always going to be on that soapbox and making sure people stay at least engaged and making sure their voices are registered and counted. And even after voting, making sure people are staying up on their local officials, staying up on their community leaders. Because Diddy said it best. He's been over the hill. There's no help coming. So we got to, all these problems we want, we got to fix them ourselves. But having a little fun with it, you know what I mean? Trying to bring the culture, trying to make sure the culture recognizes its power and helps, and also help monetize a little bit of that too.
Dope. Yeah, follow that, man. You know, that's our political correspondent, Hit Politics. A lot of things going on over there. For me, you could find me this weekend. I'll be at Stand Up New York on Saturday on the 8 p.m. show. Check that out. I told y'all I'm coming out to D.C. next year, February, D.C. Improv. Tickets are on sale now, though, so we want to sell that shit out. So go ahead and get that going. I'll be at the Borgata next month. As soon as the tickets are available, I'll put that up on the site. Michigan, I'm working on something for y'all. That'll be soon to be announced. Same thing with Philly. That'll be announced soon. Just keep an eye out on, you know, DamianLemon.com, and obviously listen here and I'll keep you informed. And look, until next time, tell a friend to tell a friend.
And even an enemy.
To get in the conversation. We out.
Conversation.